This morning on Focus, we will, during this hour of the show, we will talk about work and life and career management and those sorts of issues that we all, I think most of us anyway, have to deal with as human beings on this planet who have to earn a living and occupy ourselves in some meaningful way. And our guest for the program is someone we talked with a couple times in the past, always fun. Thomas Schenck is a career coach and management consultant. He's with the Schenck Development Group in Champaign. And he deals with a lot of these issues with his clients, various public speaking engagements and workshops and so forth. And he's here to do a little bit of a mini workshop with us. And we'll talk about some of these issues and welcome your questions, your experiences, if you'd like to share them. All you have to do is call us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around Illinois, Indiana. And maybe via the web elsewhere in the United States. You can call us at 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. Also toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Thomas Schenck, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Hope everyone is staying warm today.
I hope so, too. Inside. Because you sure can't stay warm outside.
That's right.
Well, let's dive right in. And let me suggest that with the holidays, perhaps people have a few days off and might be in the mode to sort of reflect on what they're doing. It might be a good time to sort of, you know, reimagine or review what we're doing with our time and whether it conforms with what we'd like to do, what we feel our mission and purpose in life is. Is that too corny to think about?
No. In fact, this is the perfect time of the year to think about that. Between the religious holidays, for whatever kind of religion you might practice, and between just the change of the seasons, I think this is a time of year when people start to naturally review their lives and ask themselves, well, what have I done this year? And with the new year coming up, people start to thinking, what do I want to do next year? And I think that's the exciting part of this year. This is a great time to start thinking about, why am I here? And you had mentioned earning a living. How about earning a life? Mm-hmm. I think that's really the question that is at the heart of this season. And this is really the perfect time to start thinking about that question. You may not come up with the final definitive answer, and most people take a whole lifetime to figure that part out, but this is a great time to start thinking about that. So it's not corny at all. It's very important.
No, I like your last point, too, because it may take a lifetime to figure it out. I mean, I can imagine someone thinking, well, what is my purpose in life, as if it's this big, serious thing you have to answer before you can even take a step. Not coming up with an answer might be sort of, you know, a little frightening, but In many ways, I mean, how do you begin addressing that question if, you know, nothing immediately? Well, I want to be when we're kids, want to be a fireman or a doctor or a teacher, you know, and here we are, you know, pumping gas or something.
Well, I think that first we have to maybe answer the question, why is it even important to think about this?
Yeah.
And when you study the lives of the great people in all fields, in politics and science and religion, in learning and education, in any of the fields that we might look at in human endeavor, all of the great people have always had a strong sense of mission. They know what they've wanted to do. They've known why they were doing it. And whether you agree or disagree with their perspective, they were operating from a very strong sense of personal mission. And I think that signifies why it's so important for us to try to add that same element in our own lives. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone has to aspire to be president of the United States or to accomplish great things in your field, but what we want to do is add a little bit of greatness to our everyday lives. And that really, when you look at success, that's one element of success, but I think more importantly, that's what meaning in life is all about. It's finding out why you think that you're here, and then every day doing a little bit of something to help further that mission. And that's really the reason why we want to do it. Otherwise, people just start to drift. They start to – they feel like they're on the treadmill. They feel like they're just in the rat race or just doing stuff, and they're not really making a contribution to the world or to themselves. And we want to see if we can move away from that sort of trap and into that wonderful perspective of, I know every day I'm doing a little something to not just make myself more fulfilled, but to maybe leave a positive legacy, to leave a legacy of love or kindness or learning or whatever your personal interest is there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you start? I think that is the big question for most people. I think the very easiest way to start figuring out what your mission is asking yourself, what do you love in life? And it's interesting when I'm doing workshops with people, I sometimes will ask that question, list 5 or 10 things that you love to do. And some people have a really hard time with that. What I might suggest as a good starting point for people in the audience is take out a piece of paper, number it from 1 to 20, and list out 20 things that you absolutely love to do. That's a good indication of where your mission might lie, because whatever is inside of us, call it spirit, call it whatever you like, it's always geared toward giving us pleasure, satisfaction, and fulfillment when we're doing something that is consistent with that spark inside of us. And when we can start just by simply listing out, what are the things I love to do? That's going to show you maybe some trends or some patterns in your life that you might not be aware of. And that's a great starting place.
But what if you love to just sit on a mountain and look at the sky?
You can do that. And there's a lot of people who that is their life. Now, maybe they, in their work, become an astronomer and you get paid to watch the sky. That's one example. I know of a woman, and I might have mentioned this before in this program, but down at Lake Shelbyville, who she loves to fish, and she is their on-site fishing pro. You know, she's pulling down six figures for catching fish one at a time. Now, that's pretty interesting stuff. For me, I found that as I was going through school, I started to focus on classes that I loved. And, of course, it's nice because classes you love, you tend to do better in. Well, when I started to focus on doing more of the things that I loved, I started to ask the question, how can I make this pay off for me? How can I find something that I love to do and then turn it into a profession? And that's why I ended up where I am. Now, sometimes people feel, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, I got a family to support, or I got to take care of my parents, or, hey, I just have to pay off my bills. You know, I can't go out with all this love stuff. That's just not relevant for me. That's okay, too. What we want to do then is make sure that you're off time. If you're really just at your job because you're there simply to earn a living, there's nothing wrong with that at all. And you can still be extremely productive, and you can have a satisfying job as well. But then you want to make sure that your off time is spent doing things that make you feel energetic, that make you feel like you're making a contribution, that make you feel connected, that give you more personal power. And those are the kind of areas that you can then focus on that question of, well, what do I love to do? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just have to be about the job. If you can find the job that helps you support your true mission in life, wonderful. That's great. Not everyone can do that. If you can go ahead and find activities in your personal life that support your mission, whatever your job is, you'll be able to handle it, because you'll know that every hour you're at that job grinding away for that dollar so that you can pay your bills, you know that as soon as you're off, you're going to be able to go back to the true meaning in your life, and that's going to give you the internal motivation and the ability to be patient at work so that you can express your real self in your real life.
Do you think that when we feel like we're just on that treadmill, that we're filling the time and yeah, we're earning a paycheck, but we're, you know, I know that a lot of people may feel uninspired with that kind of existence. Do you think that that's a sign or an indication that we're failing to examine those issues, you know, within ourselves and decide what it is that we really love and to pursue that in some way? Is that sort of a warning sign, perhaps?
I think it is a warning sign. And you can take the warning sign in one of two ways. One way that people can take it is you need to ask the question, is there something about my job that I can love? Is there some part of my work that can be engaging and fun and that can make me feel like I'm really making a contribution? Whatever that might be, it might be that if your job is sanding tabletops before they're assembled, then if I can do the best job sanding it, or if I can watch the wood carefully and maybe I can start to see the patterns in the wood that are beautiful to me, and maybe nobody else will care about that, but if I can get some pleasure out of just seeing that pattern emerge with each stroke of my sanding brush, hey, maybe that is the kind of meaning that you can find in your work to make it more interesting and engaging. Maybe you can just simply ask every question that there is to ask about your job and learn everything there is to learn about it, and that's where you can find the meaning, even if you're just doing something that you consider meaningful or basically pointless. You can still find some kind of energy or excitement or enthusiasm, some meaning, in other words, if you just pursue it. Now, sometimes the other option is that we need to say, this is not the right job for me. And then we need to take some of those steps to try to find out what are some of the things I enjoy doing, what are some of the things I could enjoy doing, and is there a way for me to add some of those elements to a current job or to a new job? Mm-hmm. So I think you should take it as a warning. And the question is, what are you going to do with the warning? Enrich the job that you're in through your own efforts, or are you going to start searching for that new opportunity, a new job, a new kind of work that can give you that meaning outside of the job situation?
along with these considerations, you know, if someone wants to make a change in what they're doing, or they discover that they're, you know, they suddenly realize, well, I really do want to become a fishing pro or an astronomer or whatever, there's an element of risk, because suddenly we're faced with having to make a change. And in this economy, although it's often pointed out that we're doing very well, you know, in the big picture, there are still a lot of people who aren't doing well. And there are, you know, whenever you make a jump from one thing to into the unknown, you may be putting yourself in one of those situations where, you know, you're not sure how you're going to actually pay the bills, how you're going to take care of your family and so forth. I mean, how do you manage those sorts of psychological issues in terms of the risks that we might, you know, that you might be experiencing to actually make this kind of change?
I've talked to many people who've actually gone through this process and, of course, have read a lot about people who are doing this. And I think there is a very simple way to do it, and that is by experimenting first. If I have an interest that I really enjoy, I mean, that is where I feel at my freest, where I feel that experience called flow, where I lose all sense of time, where I'm totally engaged, where I have no self-consciousness whatsoever at all. I'm just acting out of the pure enjoyment of the moment. When I find that, what I might try to do is find activities that maybe it starts off as a hobby. Maybe it starts off as a game. Maybe what I do is I read everything I can about people who are doing that right now and start to ask myself, well, could I pursue this first as a hobby? Could I pursue this as just an intellectual game of learning more about it? Could I start to practice it in the spare time that I do have? And you start that way. I wouldn't recommend people just decide one day, whoop, I'm out of here. I'm going to go try something new, be a fishing pro. I'm going to go climb a mountain. I'm going to give up all my worldly possessions and dedicate my life to working in a soup kitchen. You know, those are great ideals. But if we do them without forethought or planning, we might very well set ourselves up for failure. So what we do is practice it out, try it out first, see if we can do it in small doses initially. And then we might be able to move to the point where it takes up more and more of our lives.
Very good. We're talking this morning with Thomas Schenck. He is with the Schenck Development Group in Champaign. He's a career coach and management consultant, and we're talking about a variety of issues pertaining to managing your career and doing better in balancing things. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. In terms of how you go about pursuing your own personal vision and balancing family life and everything else that we have to do, being a citizen and so forth, there are a lot of things we're called upon to do besides simply fulfill our personal mission. How do you go about finding some kind of balance between those things? I mean, how do you go about even thinking about sort of solving that puzzle?
I think one of the basic things that people find very difficult, it boils down to you have to make choices. And when you make those choices without thinking about them, if you make them just out of habit or if you make them because that's what somebody else told you to do, that's where you're most likely to feel out of balance and in pain. On the other hand, if you make conscious decisions about how you spend your time on a daily basis, it really becomes a lot easier to feel more balance. That means that today I might decide, you know, this has really got to be a work day. I'd really rather be playing with my family. I'd really rather be reading a fun book, or I'd rather go see a movie or whatever. But today really has to be a work day. And then I might make a choice. Tomorrow I am going to go ahead and take those 2 hours out to be with my family. Or tomorrow I am going to go out to the gym and get that workout that I was hoping to do today. But if I make that conscious choice, I don't have to feel that bad about it. And I also own it. It wasn't somebody out there doing it to me. That's going to make me feel out of balance. Instead, I'm making a conscious decision. Today, I'm going to focus on the work that I have to do. Tomorrow, then I will go ahead and do other things. Now, today I might make the other decision. I might say, you know, instead I am going to spend those 2 hours with my family. And that means I'm going to be getting 2 hours less sleep tonight because I'm going to have to stay up and do my job or do whatever I needed to get done. And again, that's a choice. Nobody's doing it to me. I'm making a conscious choice. You know, there's an example I always like to use. If you ever seen a kid walking down the street and they trip on a little crack in the sidewalk, a lot of times they jump up and they yell out, ta-da! Now, they act as if they intended it that way all along.
Right.
Well, what if we were to do that as adults as well? And that gives us a greater sense of control in our lives. Now, it may not change the reality, but it changes the way we look at the reality, and that's the difference. Mm-hmm. It's what can we do to make it feel like we have more control? And one of the simplest things is to make a choice. If your family says, well, we need to spend time on during the holidays, and you also have other commitments with people at your work, you have commitments with your own specific family, not just the extended family. Maybe you're in a situation like a lot of people. You've got family in-laws in one town and your parents in another town. Maybe you've got brothers and sisters in a third town. You've got to just simply make the choice. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend a little bit of time here, a little bit of time there, and a little bit of time there, and be upfront with everyone. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be able to spend 3 days with each of you. Can't do it. So I'm going to spend 1 day with each of you, and everyone will have a little bit of time with us. Now, when I spend that little bit of time, I want to make it quality time. And when I go to my in-laws' place, I'm not going to spend, you know, half of the time with them watching television or, you know, fixing their bathroom sink. I'm going to spend time with them if I only have a little bit of time. Again, it's making choices about how we spend the time. Maybe with a lot of families, I have to say, you know, this year I'm spending Christmas with the in-laws. Next year it's going to be with my parents. And that's something that I'd have to work out with my family as well as with the extended family and let everyone know up front, this is the way we can do it so that we can all spend some time together. Maybe instead I'll say, well, I'm going to spend Christmas, but I'll tell you what, Valentine's Day, I'll come out and spend it with the other side of the family. And that's another way to do it. You don't have to wait a whole year to balance out the score sheet. You can go ahead and do it during the year. Maybe that's another option.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's
Great.
Include them.
Please.
And this is a listener in Aurora on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
I wish I would have heard you speak years ago.
Oh, well, thank you.
Very, very, very good information. I have a Christmas card I've been deliberating about for a week. I want to send it to my daughter, and I want to say succinctly what you are saying. And I can't think of a saying that implies what you are saying. The only thing I could think of is, to thine own self be true, and it must follow the night, the day, thou thence cannot be false to any man. But I don't know if that's what you're saying.
Well, that's a good question. I always love Shakespeare. He's got so much wisdom. He was, in my opinion, the first modern psychologist, but that's a whole other story.
So could you think of anything? And I'll be listening to the program, so if you can't think of it now, maybe during the program, maybe even somebody else might come up with something. We have such a great, great audience. They might come up with a saying that says what you say. Sometimes 5 words will do it better than a paragraph.
Jack, do we have a way to get her phone number so that I can call her? Because I've got a zillion quotes at home. I've got a ton of quotes at home, and I can't think
well,
of something right off the bat.
Maybe they'll come to you. If you have them at home,
okay.
You kept some in your head. I'll hang up and I'll hear and listen to what you have to say.
We'll do our best.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
You know, one thing I really respect about that, I think with family especially, it's hard. Sometimes we need to tell them things about how we use our time with them. And it's always hard to make the statement, this is a choice for me, not against you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend time with me or with the rest of my family, and it's not that I don't want to spend time with you. And being able to say that in a caring, tactful, and loving way is often very difficult. Mm-hmm. But I think that even making the effort, and if you can't find the perfect quote, even making the effort and acknowledge, you know, this is hard for me to say, or I want to make sure I'm saying it the right way to you, but here's my intent. Here are some words that I think are reflecting the intent. Please understand.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, just being able to make the effort is going to help the other person understand.
Mm-hmm.
So make the attempt. Give it a shot. And you feel free to acknowledge that this is hard for me to go ahead and express, but I need to balance out my time so that I can be with you and be happy instead of be with you and be stressed because I'm not someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a way to phrase that too.
Other callers are welcome if you'd like to join our conversation, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else you hear us, 800-222-9455. We sort of went in two different directions there in terms of, you know, purpose and time management, but I suppose they are, you know, pretty closely related if given the demands of everything these days, if we do want to pursue our life work, it also demands that we get pretty savvy about how we deal with managing our time.
I look at mission, goals, and time is really all on the same continuum. Mission is at one far end of it. It's the big broad way we manage our life. We get down going toward the middle of the continuum, and there we're talking about goals, and that's the way we're managing our life in, say, 3 to 6 months or something. Mm-hmm. And then we get down to time management, which is how we're managing our time in the next 3 to 6 hours. So all the same issue, just on a continuum.
We have a couple more calls to talk with. Let's go ahead and include them.
Please.
Next up, a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi.
Okay. I made a choice a few years ago to quit a job that was making me miserable and a type of work, and now I've cobbled together a few different part-time things which really please me and make me happy, not only because I like the work, but because I like the flexibility. It just really suits my temperament. But the problem with that is I have no benefits, my wage is very low, and I can deal with that, but the problem I have sometimes is other people saying, oh, how can you be exploited in that way? One of my jobs is being a part-time teacher, and as you might know, they really don't make much money.
Right.
But I love my work, and I try not to dwell on it too much. I try to keep a positive attitude. But society really tells you over and over again, and friends and family tell you there's something wrong with you if you're talented and so on, and you don't want to make tons of money. And that's a choice I made. I'd love to make more money, but I cannot. And I just, when you talked about choices, I really thought about that. What would you do to sort of shore up your own sense of, I've done the right thing, and I, hell with what everybody else, excuse me, what everybody else says about
right.
making less money?
You know, you're absolutely right. There is a real press to meeting a certain image or stereotype of success, if you will, and especially at certain ages in your life. And all of that gets very difficult. What you've told me from the decisions that you've made for quitting that negative job and then finding several part-time jobs that you can feel really good about, you're already acting from a strong sense of mission. And maybe what you can do to help yourself is to really write that down, define that out. I mean, if you were to write out your mission, or your vision statement, or, you know, a big purpose statement for your life, what kind of things would you include it? And obviously, teaching would be one of them, giving back. You mentioned valuing your freedom of choice. That would be another thing. But think about what are the guiding principles that have caused you to make some of those decisions that you've actually made. And I find myself, it took me a long time to come up with my personal mission and purpose statement. It took me probably a year of fiddling around with it. I would go ahead and write some ideas down, put it away for a couple weeks, pick it up, look at it, and say, you know, I think I saw that in a Hallmark card at one point. I think I better change that. I went through this big process of editing, and I finally came up with something I felt really comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you might do, and I find this a really great little tip. My wife taught me this a long time ago. You need to come up with a good story. She used to call it a bar story, a one or two or three sentence little story that you can tell people that says, this is why I did it, and that would really get them to kind of back off a little bit. And my wife recently had a little accident at home. One of her dogs bit her very seriously, and she lost part of her finger. And we realized before she went back into work, she was going to have a story. And it was a very simple, gee, you know that guideline that you're not supposed to get in the middle of two fighting dogs, and that people will go, yeah. And she said, well, why didn't you tell me that before? Now, boom, that put everyone at ease. The topic was done with, and nobody pressed her about it anymore. And that got her to move on to the next thing. So she didn't have to deal with that. Now, that's what I mean by finding a good little story. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just when I got into this business, it was, hey, I love talking to people. I like kind of asking people questions about their lives because I'm a basically nosy person. And I get to combine those two interests, and now I do what I do. Mm-hmm. So that's a way where I just have a little tiny story. It's, you know, cocktail talk, if you like to put it that way. Mm-hmm. Develop that little thing that says, what's the one thing that you really love about what you're doing? For you, it might be the story about that one little kid who had that little smile when they said that one thing that just touched your heart. And that is the heart of your story. You say that to somebody, they're not going to push you anymore about, are you really doing the right thing?
I also learned, don't disclose how much money you make. That was the thing I was doing. Oh,
yes, that's always.
Why did I do that? Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome, and congratulations. Not a lot of people have the strength of courage and the conviction of their principles to actually go out and live them, even if there's a financial cost, and I really applaud that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. We have another listener waiting on line number two in Urbana. Let's talk with them. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes. I've been listening to your show, and the caller before, this last caller, said about short little sayings.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can say a lot with a few words. And there's one little saying that I've always liked, and it's taught me a lot about family. And it's from a song, and it says, if you can't be with the ones you love, love the ones you're with.
I believe that's Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young.
Right. Exactly. I wasn't sure if you were going to get that or not. Exactly. And I've always felt like, because I have family that's abroad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't always get to spend the holidays with my family abroad, you know, and sometimes it's very difficult during the holidays to be away from your family and the people you love. And, you know, and it's one of those, it was when I heard those lines, it just really hit me how important it is that sometimes you can't do certain things because maybe you're on the road to getting those things done, you know. So, you know, just enjoy it where you're at now.
You've really hit on one of the absolute fundamental keys for happiness in
exactly.
any and every area of your life.
Uh-huh.
Life is not perfect. And I don't know what would happen if it was, but it's not. And some people make the choice to be unhappy no matter what's going on. And other people make the choice to be happy.
Uh-huh.
You can be happy with the way things are the way they are and know that you're trying to improve it as well. Or you can be unhappy because it's not perfect yet. And I think that you've really made that kind of choice. You know, one saying that just popped into my mind was, home is where you hang your hat. And some people say, well, that means you're rootless, or that means that you don't really have a sense of what home is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at it the way you do. Mm-hmm. It means that wherever I am, I'm going to choose to find love, to find happiness, and to find the companionship that will make me feel like a whole person. And that's a great way to look at it.
It certainly is. I mean, it took a while for me to acquire. It's like acquiring the taste for beer. You know, it's like the first time I tried beer, I thought it tasted terrible. But then it's like you learn to acquire the sensitivity of just appreciating and loving and having fun with the people that are around you.
You know, I'm going to also play junior psychologist here. I'm going to take that one step further.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to do that, I bet you must have started off with a good sense of yourself. You were comfortable with yourself enough to know that just because I'm not with my family doesn't mean that they don't love me, and it doesn't mean that I don't love them. So you started out, I think, with some maybe high self-esteem or high self-confidence, and wherever that came from, that's what helped you,
oh, well, thank you.
Kind of look at your situation and say, you know, I can find people around me now who I can feel really good about being with, and it may not take the place of my family, but it's a great supplement to my family.
Well, what happens too is like it's like you over the holidays, it's such a family-oriented time, you know, that it's very easy if you don't have family, or if your family's far away and you can't afford to go visit them or whatever, you know, to fall into that trap of feeling depressed or for Thanksgiving or Christmas, you know, whatever. And sure, I mean, sometimes I get a little sad, but I try to be around people who are good to me. You know, that's the thing too. I think that's something that I've learned, is just to appreciate what I have with me now, you know? And even though it's not like the ideal thing, you know, I mean, if I could be with my family over the holidays, that would be ideal. But I also have good friends that I can be around, you know, so I can appreciate that.
Absolutely. Having people who are treating you well is an important part,
exactly.
whether they're your family or not, whether your family is near or far. I think that is one of the things. People sometimes accept relationships that are hurtful or harmful because they don't feel they can be alone by themselves. It's
exactly.
better to have a bad relationship than no relationship. And I think that's a very unhappy mistake that some people make. You've made a decision to surround yourself with some good people to start off with, and that
otherwise
really helps.
I'd be by myself. You know, if I don't hang around people who don't respect me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd rather be by myself. But it's no fun to be by yourself, of course, you know. I think it's natural for humans to want companionship, you know. I think that's natural. I mean, if you don't want human companionship, and then you're not normal, maybe, you know, I think it's normal, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like you don't want to be around. You want to be around people who are going to be, you know, who are going to give you what you need, who are going to be nice to you, you know, who are going to respect you, you know.
And this is a good time to maybe reexamine some of your relationships. Again, it's a time of
exactly. It's
a time of evaluation and a time of new beginnings, and it's a good time to ask yourself, are the relationships around me supportive? Are they
uh-huh.
are they healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Are the closest ones loving? And when they're not, should I fix them? Should I try? Should I just leave? And that's a good question to ask. I wouldn't jump in either direction without thinking about it,
exactly. But
this is a time of the year to maybe go up to somebody and say, you know, I realize that our relationship has been great, and I've never really thanked you, and I want to say thank you and how much I value you. And it might be the case you go up to somebody and say, you know, we've got a relationship, and I think we can improve. Do you think we can work on it together?
Yeah.
And
that's
a great time of the year.
Yeah.
People are open to that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks very much.
Well, you're very welcome. And one other thing I'd want to suggest, you kind of reminded me, I think everyone who is away from family and wants to feel a little more closeness, a great way to do that is by continuing some of the same rituals that you practiced when you were with your family. Big and small. You know, my family, when it was the holiday season, one of the traditions was a goose dinner. Now, my wife and I, we do that as well, not every year necessarily, but we do a goose dinner, and I feel a little closer to my family even though we're 1,000 miles apart.
That's a nice idea, yeah. That's a really good idea.
When it comes to some of the simple traditions, and maybe that is the big holiday dinner starts at 3 o'clock instead of your normal dinner time at 6. Well, you know, that's a little way to feel like you're back home with them.
Yeah.
I know some families, they'll go ahead and they'll set a place out for the missing parties. And, you know, that's a way to feel a little closer.
Yeah.
It may be the case that, hey, our tradition was on Christmas Day, for example, we all went out for a long walk, weather permitting. Well, that's something I'd want to do even if I was away from my family so I can feel a little closer to them.
Yeah, that's really true, because there is one thing that I've always wanted to do, being away from home. At back home, they do mangers, but they'll do like whole towns and villages.
Ah.
You know, and they'll fill up a whole room where they will decorate this whole room that depicts a town or a village and the manger where the baby Jesus was born, right?
Right.
But they just like, they'll do like the hills and the water and the little river. And,
wow.
You know, and I've always wanted to do that here, but I never seemed to be able to find all the stuff that I need for it.
Well, you know what I'd suggest? Don't find all the stuff. Just start. Do something, one or two little pieces, to give you that sense that you're participating with your family, even
yeah.
if you can't do as much as they did.
Yeah.
Do as much as you can, and that might be a little small coffee table, a little small.
I've done
end table
small ones,
with
I've
just a couple things.
To do a big one, you know. I always thought that would be so much fun.
Well, you
so
might
one
start
of these
that.
Years, I think I will
start that as a new tradition. Call
yeah.
all the friends that you have here. Tell
Are
everyone
kidding?
To bring one piece.
All my neighbors would want to come and see it.
And have a little party where everyone brings one piece, kind of like instead of a potluck food party.
Uh-huh.
You'll have a little manger building party.
That's a great idea. I like that. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. Thanks. We have just about 15 minutes left with our guest, Tom Schenck from the Schenck Development Group. And we're kind of dipping into sort of the family tradition area here, and that's okay. We're talking about work and life purpose and balancing things, so it kind of fits into that.
Sure.
If other people would like to join us, if you're listening and have a question or a story to share, whatever, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana, anywhere else, 800-222-9455. For some, this is going to seem really maybe pathological here, but when I was listening to the two of you talking, I started thinking about stress. Because I think along with all these wonderful experiences that we have and maybe family traditions and so forth, the holidays for many people and extending into other areas of our life as well, maybe it's all part of one piece, we feel a lot of stress around the holidays. You know, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, you know, and no one else ever experiences that. But it also, I mean, because of the demands of the traditions and the travel and the gatherings and also work and everything, you know, that's something that is part of the holiday experience as well. How do you deal with that?
You know, there's a lot of talk about stress during this time of the year, and it really is literally a big killer. A lot of people get so stressed out that this is the time of year when heart attacks and depression and other serious physical ailments are on the upswing because of the basic issue of stress. And it's also important to really start to ask yourself, how stressed am I feeling because of the holiday? And I think it's time to take responsibility for some of the feelings that we create in ourselves. There's a Walmart commercial, I think, or some store commercial where the woman is saying she's buying 75 gifts for people. You know, I think there's some self-induced stress going on there. That's a lot of folks, a lot of people buying gifts, and maybe that's a little too commercial. Maybe that's just a little bit of commercialism on the part of whatever store was doing that advertising. Mm. But I think the point is well taken. A lot of people put the holiday stress on themselves. It doesn't come from the busy schedules. It doesn't come from family expectations. It doesn't come from Madison Avenue advertising. It comes from our own expectations of how much we can or should be doing. And that's a good place to start. You know, I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today, and one thing that kind of came to my mind was maybe a great example that would be appropriate for both personal life and work life, and that is a party that my wife and I threw 2 weeks ago. It was a large holiday dinner. We had 17 people. It was a themed dinner. It was a Renaissance theme. So everybody came in costume. The house was completely decorated. We planned on 10 courses. The actual meal took about 6 hours to complete. So this was a huge undertaking and certainly a ripe opportunity for stress if we did it in a stressful way. Mm-hmm. We decided to do a little differently. And I was thinking about what lessons could I pull out for reducing holiday stress. And I think I've got a couple of very simple ones. The first and foremost thing that we did that made this event much less stressful, and by the way, it was hugely successful at the end of it all, the thing that made it less stressful, first and foremost, was planning. Planning and organizing what we wanted to accomplish. We started off by just keeping an idea file. So we knew we were going to have this party. We just kept over about a month or 2 months before the party. Every time we have an idea, you know, we're sitting there watching TV in the living room, we're driving around in the car, we jot it down on a piece of paper, we throw it in the file as soon as we got into the living room. That file kind of grew over a month, and then when it came time to do the serious planning, we just simply pulled out the ideas, and we remembered all the things that we had talked about. So we didn't lose any of our great ideas. It was a very easy way to capture those ideas, and it certainly reduced some of the stress of planning the event. We made lots of lists and written plans, and I think that was another big part of the planning and organizing process. It may sound silly to write out a plan for a party, but if it's a big party and you're inviting a lot of people, if it's a party that's really important to you, guess what? That's just as serious as a project that you might face at the job. That's just as serious as a project that's got lots of money riding on it for your employer. Mm-hmm. So this is something we really wanted to treat in a serious way. So we wrote down some plans. We wrote down some ideas. We wrote lots and lots of to-do lists. Some of the to-do lists were things that we needed to do, to prepare. Some of the things were shopping lists so that we remembered, oh, I need this certain spice for one of the recipes, or we need to get pans, or whatever it was. Then we'd have that all in one spot, and that planning and organizing really helped us out. So that's the first step when we talk about reducing holiday stress. Whether we're talking about stress at the job, because a lot of jobs, it's got year-end wrap-up stuff, a lot of projects come due at the end of the calendar year, that's an opportunity for stress. Or whether it's a personal situation, we still have to treat it as if it were a project. And when we treat it with planning and organizing ourselves, we don't have to do a lot of complex stuff. You don't have to go out to the office supply store and buy fancy forms. You don't have to buy a software package for your computer. It's just simply taking a blank sheet of paper and writing to-do at the top and just keeping a running list, and that by itself helps.
Okay, follow up on the to-do list.
Yes.
Because I think many of us have had the experience of making a to-do list or writing down a bunch of notes, and then somehow there's a disconnect between that list and what actually happens. How do you make an effective plan or list of things that you're going to do? How is it that you can actually make this a practical part of solving whatever you're doing?
One of the big keys, I think, is even with the to-do list, you have to be realistic. A lot of times people write 100 items on their to-do list. There's no way in a day you're going to be able to accomplish all those things. And so the first thing is we have to really be realistic as we're writing things down. I think the best way to do that is by prioritizing them. What are the absolute must-do, the A top one priorities? Those are the ones you should always focus on first. Even if they're not necessarily the fun ones or the quick ones or the easy ones, if they are the ones that are most important, just do that. A second key for making the to-do list more meaningful and useful as a tool is really to write it down. When it's written down, personally, a lot of times I'll write a to-do list. I'll lose the list. I'll put it down someplace. I'll forget it before I go out. But writing it down once helps me fix it into my brain, mm-hmm. and then I'm able to accomplish a lot more. The other thing is you've got to follow up from the to-do list. And one strategy that I think is I use all the time, at the end of the day, I review my to-do list. Anything that I didn't accomplish, I go ahead and carry it over to the next day's to-do list. Now, when I see the same task on two or three or four days' worth of to-do lists, that's a big sign to me. Either A, I need to just drop it, or B, I need to delegate it to somebody else, even if that's at home, mm-hmm. or C, I need to go ahead and just get busy and do it. And that might be my top priority that fifth day if I haven't done it in the other four. Well, those are a couple of very easy tasks or ways to use the to-do list more effectively.
Good. We have another caller waiting in Chicago on line number four. We'll go to them. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
I guess we could call you a real Mr. Feelgood.
Well, I hope so.
Well, power of positive thinking, perhaps, huh?
Yes, but positive thinking in a lot of ways of looking at it is mental health. Negative thinking in a lot of ways of looking at it is mental unhealth, if I can say it that way. Positive thinking is a way of approaching reality that says, I can't control what life gives me, but I can control how I react to what life gives me. And that positive perspective, the research shows very clearly, leads to better results. Now, positive perspective isn't Pollyanna-ish if you're doing it right. So I'm not ignoring the bad things that happen, but I'm dealing with them head on. And that's where positive thinking really comes in. If I know today is as cold as it is, and even up in Chicago, I know it's even colder than it is here in Champaign, but if I go out without my coat just thinking, hey, I got a positive attitude, I'm going to be warm, I'm going to be in serious trouble. The positive person would bring not just one coat, but maybe an extra one in the car so that if something does happen, they'll be extra prepared. So I always want to clarify, positive thinking isn't just Pollyanna or ignoring the negative. It's dealing with both positive and negative head on and acknowledging reality exactly the way it presents itself. It's a very honest way of looking at life when you're doing it with the right intent.
Well, is it your outlook that poor people have mostly negative thinking because their life experiences? That's the way it seems to me. Somebody's got a rolling in wealth, a lot of money and stuff. Why they are very optimistic.
You know, it's interesting. When the studies are done, there really is no strong trend or correlation between wealth and attitude. There's a lot of very wealthy people who are very negative, and there's a lot of very poor people who are very positive. So there's not a good strong correlation. It is fair to say that wealthy people tend to think thoughts that attract more wealth. Poor people tend to think thoughts that limit their ability to get wealth. That is something that is pretty well demonstrated. Wealthy people are often thinking of ways that they can capitalize the assets they have to generate more assets. They tend to do the things that are going to help them save and earn more money in the future. Poor people tend to have the kind of thoughts that discourage them from doing the kind of things that help them generate money. I think one good example is there's this very strong correlation between education and wealth and poverty. People who tend to be poor tend not to value education. Not valuing education is almost a guarantee you're not going to be able to attract a lot of wealth or generate a lot of wealth.
Well,
that's just one example. There's a lot of others, of course, that we can add in there.
It seems your outlook justifies the status quo, and there's no room in it for a program of revolution.
I'm not sure what you mean by program of revolution, but what I will say is attitude is an outlook is something that everyone manufactures every day. If you're an adult, if you have reached your level of mental maturity, let's say 18 just to be arbitrary, you have the ability every single day to decide whether you're going to be more positive or more negative. And it doesn't matter what your past experience has been. You can choose to think a different way. We have been given, if you will, the power of free will, and that means every single person can create their own attitudes. Now, sometimes we have to overcome lots and lots of habit, and that is difficult. That's true. But everyone is able to create new kinds of thinking simply by making the choice. You know, there's an old saying, if you continue to think the way you've always thought, you will continue to think the same way in the future. If you always thought one way, unless you make a conscious choice, you'll continue that same kind of thinking. But everyone has the ability to change their way of thinking if they make a conscious choice.
There's one thing that the caller raised in talking about the revolution. I'm not sure where that was going, but interesting points he made. There's maybe a confusion that we are in danger of making between wealth and poverty and the value of a human life, that somehow, and I think this is something that maybe our culture tells us through its commercial messages, that if you are wealthy, you are a better person or more valuable, that this defines you somehow as a more successful person. And it may be in one measure that is of wealth, but doesn't necessarily relate to, other sort of core values as a human being. Perhaps, someone who chooses to be a part-time teacher, for example.
Exactly.
Will never be wealthy, but that, maybe she's having more of an impact on more people in a positive way.
Well, one of my famous examples has got to be Mother Teresa. There's a person who had no material wealth, and yet I think that she lived a life that was completely consistent with her values, and she lived a life that was completely fulfilled and fulfilling for her. Now, on the other hand, you might take somebody like Donald Trump. That guy has more money than most of us will ever see in a lifetime. And yet I never get the sense when I see him in interviews or on TV that he's really comfortable with his wealth, that he's not satisfied with where he is right now. He seems to always want more. Now, I don't know Mr. Trump, so I'm only speaking as an outside observer, but he doesn't seem real comfortable. Now, somebody like Bill Gates, there's another guy who has he's the wealthiest person in this country, at least. Now, he seems to be very comfortable with his level of wealth. He doesn't seem to have any problems whatsoever, and that's one reason why he gives a huge quantity of his money away in all kinds of different charities and projects. So the idea that satisfaction in life and fulfillment in life comes or correlates with wealth that's not true. It just doesn't work that way. There's a lot of people who are poor by society standards who are very satisfied with their lives and are making great contributions to the people around them and to their communities. And there's a lot of people who are very wealthy who really don't have anything positive to offer. That's really kind of an independent factor. Wealth and value in life in your own sense, your sense of self-worth, your sense of self-value and the feeling of fulfillment don't necessarily go along with your checkbook.
Right. Well, we're just about at a point where we're going to have to stop. There are many things we could talk about. I suppose that's probably a good place to leave it, unless you have some final thing you want to pass on for the holidays.
Well, I think that I would have to recommend it for everyone. This is a great time to do a little reflecting in your life, and not just when you're sitting in your church, whatever that might be, on the highest holy night of your church, and the preacher is telling you, well, you should be thinking about the grander things. But this is something you should take on as a holiday project. Ask yourself, what are the things that are most meaningful to me? Ask yourself, where are the big values in my life, and what do I want to accomplish in my life? And start to formulate those answers. Write them down. There's a lot of great resources out there that talk about how to develop your own life's purpose statement. When you have a clear sense of purpose, you can accomplish anything in your life. Your life will feel more fulfilled, and you'll have a greater sense of peace, satisfaction, and much less stress. And identifying that personal mission statement, whatever society thinks about it, is going to give you the greatest satisfaction so that you can have a great new year and a great life.
Amen.
Amen.
Our guest has been Thomas Schenck from the Schenck Development Group in Champaign, and pleased to have you on once again, Tom.
It was wonderful being here. I want to wish everyone a happy holiday season. Be safe, be warm, and be happy.